It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Yeah. Hello, America. Hello, I'm Bill Carnes, your host of the Second Amendment Radio Show. We'd like to shorten that down. Call ourselves 2A Radio, the website 2aradio.com. You can always go there and check out some stuff, including listening to the archives, which are posted there from the inception of the show back in March of 2009. I'd like to start the show today by talking a little bit about defensive home defense guns. Now, home defense guns, depending on where you read the articles, depending on who's sponsoring the articles, but depending on if you read the articles in a magazine, who the major contributors are, the advertisers in that magazine, really kind of gives you an idea of some of the backgrounds and why people are pointing you in a particular direction for a gun. Okay, so here's your options for guns. You get a handgun or a long gun? All right. What type of long guns are there? Well, rifle, shotgun, carbine, submachine gun. For handguns, of course, you can have a little guy, a big guy. You can have a light mounted on it, a laser, nothing at all. So let's go through some of these things. And I'm going to arrive at the Bill Carnes response, what Bill Carnes likes. And if you like something else, that's fine. What I'm going to do is give you a little bit of information on the best way to use that tool. If you're going to use a tool that you believe is the best, that's great. Your belief in your equipment is way more important than your hearing somebody else tell you, you should go with this, and you don't believe in that equipment. See what I'm saying? If you believe a 12-gauge shotgun is absolutely the right home defense tool, well then great. Let's make sure that your 12-gauge shotgun is the right type of shotgun and it's loaded with the proper type of ammunition and gear. If you believe a handgun is the best option, well, let's talk about what type of handgun, caliber, ammo, what type of gear to have with that. So let's get into it. We'll talk about handguns for starters. First of all, I am a big fan of the idea that a defensive caliber should begin with a number 4. Meaning 40, 44, 45, something like that. Not always does it have to be that way. 9mm is just fine. A 357 Magnum is just fine. A 38 snub is a little bit weak. 25 ACP, incredibly weak. But I will also tell you this. Shot placement is far more important than caliber. However, we're talking about home defense guns. If you're going to deploy this home defense gun, it's in your home, it's going to be a surprise. Unfortunately, oftentimes, that surprise comes at night when you're groggy or whatever the case may be. You're not going to be at your very best. You're going to be more so towards your very worst. So to have a gun with a larger caliber would tend to make sense. If your accuracy is going to be down because of the grogginess, the unexpected surprise of having to defend yourself in your home, a gun that begins with a higher caliber would tend to make sense. Out on the street, if you're carrying a gun, well, you're a little bit more alert, a little bit more awake. You've purposely put your gun on. If you want to carry around a 9mm that carries, 19 or 20 rounds in it, that's not a bad choice. It's not. It then becomes an idea of, would I rather have a larger caliber or a larger number of rounds? Because you can fit just so much brass, copper-plated lead, and powder into a fixed device of a gun. in either their very large rounds, like say that of a 1911, or their smaller rounds in a similar size space, such as that as a Glock Model 17, or even one of the new XDMs that carries like 19 rounds in it. You've got a defined amount of space that you can carry the ammo in. So if you want to carry quantity as opposed to size, and I don't want to say quality. Quality is a different aspect. Quantity of rounds as opposed to the size of the rounds, and that's fine as well. But in your home, my recommendation is a larger caliber. Now, I happen to have literally attached to my bed as my emergency, while I really got caught off guard, and I'm in bed, gun. I keep a handgun, and it begins with a 4, 40 caliber. In fact, it's 10 millimeter. It is a Glock Model 20, 10 millimeter. It has a 15-round capacity. It is a large-framed gun. You have to wear at least a size large glove, if not extra large, to really be able to grip and manage this pistol very well. It is the largest frame Glock they make. Same size frame as the Model 21 is the Model 20. Large framed gun. Now, they make the Model 24, whatever it is, MCL. There's a letter designation next to it where they actually reduce the size of the frame where you would grip the gun. It makes it a little bit easier to control. It makes it more like the full-size models, like the Model 17, the Model 22, things like that. They have not done that, to the best of my knowledge, at Glock with the Model 20. Anyhow, I also have a dedicated light mounted to the gun, and I have night sights on it. That's it. And I keep it loaded with full power, not downloaded power, full power 10mm rounds. The downloaded 10mm rounds, which are so common in today's place, are the same effect as a 40 Smith & Wesson. Why carry a bigger gun with a longer cartridge that gives you the same ballistic efficiency as a gun that you can carry that's smaller, or you can carry more rounds in it? So I have that. Now, there's other options that you can have. Let's say that you're going to go with a long gun. Okay, again, rifle, shotgun, a pistol caliber carbine, a submachine gun, things like that. Those are the next part of the debate. And we're going to take up some of the following segments in today's radio show. And we're going to really kind of drill down on that a little bit. We'll start with shotguns coming up in the next segment. We'll talk about shotguns, the style of shotguns, things you want to look for, things you want to avoid, maybe some extra gear on there, maybe some things to avoid, as well as, most importantly, the gauge and what ammo to load into this thing, and a lot of misbeliefs and misunderstandings about shotgun ammunition and home defense. So we're going to hit you with that right after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio. We'll be right back.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back, everyone. Today we're talking about home defense guns and ammunition and your options out there. We talked about handguns in the first segment. Now we're going to move on a little bit to shotguns. Now, the first question about shotguns is, what gauge? Should it be 20 gauge, 16 gauge, 10, 410, 10 gauge, what is it, a 26? What should we carry? What should it be? Well, I'll give you this. The ammunition which is available on a wider variety and much more accessible gauge is by no stretch of the imagination, nothing beats 12-gauge shotgun for the availability and the options of what to shoot. Now, That being said, if you've ever seen or witnessed anyone shot with a 12-gauge shotgun with proper ammunition, that is overkill. I mean, it's a lot. Somebody gets hit by a 12-gauge shotgun, that is really an impressive thing to witness and see someone actually get hit with such an awesome amount of power. 20-gauge shotguns are pretty good. The difference is the ammunition selection. Now, what a lot of people do, falsely do, and mistakenly do, having not really understood any research behind it, is they will load their 12-gauge shotguns with birdshot, like number 7, 6.5, number 8, something like that. A really, really light-loaded birdshot. Now, anybody that's ever taken a shotgun and gone hunting, and let's say you're going after something like quail, and you've got maybe a number 8 shot in there, it's not going to take the quail out. You have to have, at minimum, 6.5, maybe 4 shot is even better for quail. Something like a goose, bigger bird, a little bit tougher. Right? A goose, sometimes even with number 4 shot, is not going to take the bird down. Certainly not number 6.5, 7, 7.5, 8. You're just not going to get the goose down with that. Yet, you're talking about taking on something which is more so the size and weight of an antelope or a deer. We're talking about a human being. Much more similar makeup. Mammals, skin. Now, the skin of these animals is a little tougher, so that would be simulated by clothing being worn by a human. You've got open areas on the side of a deer and antelope, you know, chest open front areas on a human. So, not too dissimilar. Would you ever hunt deer or antelope with a shotgun, with birdshot? And the answer is unequivocally no. The reason is you can't take it down. So, if you take birdshot, it penetrates just so far. Now, here's the difference in the shot. The higher the number in birdshot, like double-aught, triple-aught is even bigger. Then you get into smaller areas. You get triple-aught, double-aught. You'd go to number 2, number 4, number 6, number 7, number 8. All these shots, as you go higher in numbers, I just went, what ends up with the shot is they get smaller, and there's more of them. And as they get smaller, they obviously are lighter in weight. Number 8 shot is almost like dust. It's almost if you pop open a round of ammunition and you pour it out and the powder in there happens to be the ball powder, number 8 shot is not too much dissimilar from that, and it's just made of lead, in some cases steel. So to shoot a human being with that, when that's the sort of thing that you might take out a quail with, which is a small bird, maybe dove, if you have a long barrel, maybe. If that's the size of the animal that you're going to take, great. But if now you're talking about something which is hundreds of times heavier, you know, you got a quail or a dove that weighs less than a pound, a few ounces in some cases, and now you're going to take on someone who's maybe a couple hundred pounds, hundreds of times heavier, 300-400 times heavier, but you want to take it down with the same round, it's not going to stop people. Here's the idea when it comes to the weight of a bullet or shot in a shotgun. It works for either. And the area, the target that you're going to hit with it. Set yourself up an empty aluminum can. Drink a soda, drink a beer, whatever. Don't drink the beer in this particular case. Grab one you drank the day before. Set up this empty aluminum 12-ounce can. All right? Or if you like the energy drinks, the 16-ounce can. Set that up. Grab two similar objects, two objects of similar size, a baseball and a tennis ball. Now, you grab the tennis ball and you hurl it at that can. And you see what kind of damage the tennis ball does to the can. Now, set up a similar can and do the same thing this time with the baseball. Similar exterior dimensions. The weight is what's different. Hurl the baseball at it and see what happens. This is what you're talking about when it comes to bullet weight versus lighter or heavier. Okay, it has more inertia, E equals MC squared. There's more energy, there's more inertia behind it. When we're talking about shotguns, it's even more profound. If you take a number 8 shot for a tiny little bird you might go out bird hunting for, and then you take double-aught buck. Now, that double-aught buck would destroy the bird. There would be virtually nothing left, nothing usable, anyhow. But yet, the small little BBs in the number 8 shot will take that little bird down. One of those little BBs will find its little birdie heart and destroy the little birdie heart. One might go in the little birdie eye and take out the little birdie brain. That's not what's going to happen to a large animal. In this case, a two-legged animal, a human being. Now, I've actually run ballistics tests with birdshot included into the ballistics test on chunks of meat, beef. Chunks of beef, right? And we put a sweatshirt over it. You know, just one of these thicker sweatshirts. There was no skin on top of this thing, so we didn't have that. But we did have a sweatshirt that we shot through. And the bird shot failed to penetrate even 1 inch. Even a single inch into this meat. Which is what you are. You're walking around. You got skin underneath that. What do you got? You got meat. Underneath that, you got bones. Inside there, you got different blood vessels, maybe depending on the target area within the chest here. Then you've got some of the arteries and some of the organs and things such as that. If it's not going to penetrate an inch, what makes you think it's going to stop somebody, especially if they're wearing more clothing, like even a thick leather jacket and a couple of shirts underneath? Oh, well, some of the argument is, well, it's going to be like they got hit with a sledgehammer. No, it's not. If it were a shotgun slug and you shot them into a bulletproof vest, I should say a bullet-resistant vest, and it doesn't penetrate, that would be like a sledgehammer to the chest. But birdshot, I refer you to the tennis ball versus baseball. Or even a better situation to really reference it would be a wiffle ball versus a golf ball, like the little wiffle golf balls or the full-size golf ball, or the wiffle softball in a full-size softball. It's that dramatic with shotguns. So the idea of, buckshot over penetrates. False. Wrong answer. It does not. We'll get into that after the break. We'll talk a little bit about the penetration argument. And the thing is, a lot of people just, they read something, they read it once, they believe it, it's great. They continue to dispel this myth. You actually have to look into it and do it, which is something that I do. I've actually run the ballistics test, so I'm going to tell you about what I found out. So, we'll hear about shotgun ammo after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
And welcome back from the break, everyone. We're talking about shotgun ammo for home defense and the selected. Some of the myths involved. Some people decide that birdshot is a good thing to carry for bad guys. We're dispelling that myth right now. And some of the reason is, well, if I load buckshot, there's going to be over penetration. It might go through the walls and, you know, shoot somebody else, hit my kid, hit my wife, hit my dog. You never know. Okay, well, that's a legitimate thing to be concerned about. Let's address that concern. If you're concerned that you're going to miss a bad guy in your house, first of all, what distances are we talking about in your house? The furthest distance I could possibly shoot in my house, the pattern is going to open up to that of about my hand. If I open up my hand, my fingers are apart, a hand span. That's about as much as it's going to open up. To the furthest distance in which the pattern could open up and actually go through a wall based on where my kid would be in another room, it's way closer than that. So what that leads us to then is, if you're so concerned, okay, put yourself, all right, this is where my kid is in this room. Where would I have to be? Where would the bad guy have to stand in line of that? And where would I have to be in order to shoot if I missed that my kid would be in danger, or my wife, or my dog, whatever. My Picasso, which is on the other side of that wall. In that case, you just get yourself a piece of Kevlar and put it behind the painting. You're good. Should work fine. If you realize, that's really not a big concern. If it is a concern, have your kid move their bed. So in the middle of the night, that's not where they are. Teach them to get under the bed or somewhere safe in their room, whatever it might be. A different show, different discussion. Now, you'll probably realize that if you can miss a full-size human being from there with a shotgun, the reason is you're not trained well, which means you shouldn't have that shotgun as a home defense gun. You should be trained with the gun before you decide that I'm going to employ it. Biggest mistake that most people who are actual gun owners make is they never learn how to use their guns properly. Biggest mistake is you either A, never go out and learn to shoot it, or B, you learn to shoot it while at the range with the guy that sold you the gun, or C, you have some friend or relative or something that has shot for a while, so you have them show you. In this case, it's the blind leading the blind. Now, if I wanted to go learn to drive an 18-wheeler, I'm not just going to ask somebody that I know that's driven one for a while to show me how to do it. I'm going to go to a professor. I'm going to go to truck driving school. If you're going to learn how to shoot a gun, go to shooting school. Find somebody who really knows about defensive, if that's what you want to learn. Okay, if you go to somebody that does bullseye shooting, or they just teach you how to put all of those rounds into a tight little fist-sized group at 7 yards, with no time limit, no stress whatsoever. Now, that's a place to start, but that's not the place to finish. If you can do that, and that's all you can do, you're not ready for a home defense gun. So, I digress. I revert back now. We're talking about ammo selection. Oh, I don't want it to overpenetrate and go into another room or even exit the house. First of all, we're going to now talk about double-odd buck. Double-odd buck is the standard issue, standard used baseline ammunition. Lead double-odd buck. Why lead? A, it's heavy. B, it's soft as far as metals go. Quite soft. And it deforms rapidly. When it deforms, that energy is released outwards towards the sides. It does not end up with overpenetration. Now, that's unless you have extreme velocity and quite a bit of weight behind it. And oftentimes if something's jacketed, like a jacketed bullet, right? That's when you might have more penetration. But you've got to have extreme velocity. And generally some sort of a jacket over it. We do not have extreme velocity jacket, copper jacket covered lead, extra heavy shot going out of the shotguns. We don't have that. Now, each of the little lead balls in double-odd buck, 12-gauge, standard stuff, you'll either get 8 or 9 balls in there depending on the manufacturer. 8 or 9 pellets. That's about the equivalent of a .32 ACP. Not a particularly impressive round. However, when we're now talking about 8 or even 9 of these 32 ACPs, and it would be more of an ACP magnum because of the velocity, more like 1,300 to 1,600 feet per second, depending on the barrel length and the ammunition selection. And they're striking all simultaneously. That is devastating. Take a 32 ACP magnum, if they made such a thing, times 8 or 9, that is now the numbers that you're dealing with, which is, again, devastating to somebody getting hit by it. So, will it overpenetrate? The weight of the ammunition itself, traveling at the velocity that it leaves, the faster something is leaving your gun, the faster it decelerates. It decelerates faster than something that left at a slower speed. So it leaves rapidly. It's decelerating quickly. I mean, you're not going to get double-odd buck and get a good hit at it 100 yards. It's just not going to happen. The energy dissipates rapidly. You're not going to get a good hit at 50 yards in most cases with most guns in any situation. Those lead balls, they just decelerate and lose their effectiveness rapidly. The beauty of a shotgun in a closer situation. You don't have to worry about a rifle round going too far. So, double odd buck is the way to go. Now, which double odd buck do I go with? Do I go with the Magnum, the standard load, or the light loads? They call them tactical loads. Well, I'll give you my recommendation on them. Go with the tactical loads. They are prevalent. They are all over the place. Basically, every defensive ammunition manufacturer makes a double-odd buck 12-gauge tactical load. Tactical is the word that they use for one that's got a little bit less powder in it. Doesn't quite have the velocity of a hunting load or a hunting magnum load. 2 3/4 inch is all you need. You don't need the 3-inch double-odd buck. For God's sake, you do not need a duck gun with a 3.5-inch chamber and a 3.5-inch magnum double-odd buck. I've actually seen those. There are 18 pellets. If you really want to feel the power of a shotgun pushing back into your shoulder and really want to see this devastating effect of a double load of double-odd buck, try a couple of those. Shoot it at a steel plate, shoot it at a paper target, and just see what one of these 3.5-inch magnum double-odd buck rounds will do. That, my friends, is impressive. The standard loads, they're fine. The tactical loads, much better. You can load those things up into your gun, and you can train with them because they're not going to kick your shoulder out of place. You're not going to worry about recoil in a defensive situation. You're not going to notice the kick, the recoil, nothing. You will when you're training. The tactical loads work all the time. Cops use them. They put people down with double-odd buck all the time with these tactical loads. That's the stuff to get. Now, what sort of action? Should we go with a pump? Should we go with a semi-auto? Should we have a light on it? Should we have anything else? Well, those are questions we're going to answer in the next segment. We're going to talk about the different actions and accessories and my view on how you should roll. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these commercials. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back, everyone. Now, we're talking about shotguns in this segment of, for home defense. We're talking about what action. Well, what actions do you have? You got a single shot shotgun. You got an over and under. You got a coach gun. You got a double barrel, obviously, part of a coach gun-esque. Pump action, lever action, semi-auto. Let's stick to really the ones that are much more appropriate for home defense. That would be pump action, semi-auto. Let's put the others on the shelf. If you could get a lever action in 12-gauge, that'd be great. There's only one or two that were ever made. None of them are made now. You're not going to get the gun that was in Terminator 2, that lever action, little thing that Schwarzenegger carried around on the stolen Harley that he was riding around. You're not going to find that. So semi-auto and pump are really what you're looking for because you get more than two rounds. And two rounds might be enough. Might not. Single round might be enough. Might not. You never want to fire all of your ammo and then decide whether or not it was enough. So, you want to have a gun with a little bit more oomph to it. By the way, let me digress just for a moment. We're going to talk about 20-gauge shotguns. You can get a 20-gauge shotgun. You can get a 20-gauge pump action shotgun. Usually for around $200. Like at your local shooting store or even Walmart or something. You can get like a Remington 870 20 gauge youth model shotgun. Youth model meaning the stock is a little shorter. Most long guns of stocks are way too long to begin with. The 20 gauge will not beat you up. If you load it with number 2 buck, that's pretty good for defensive loads. You don't need to do anything to the gun. Okay. Now, we'll talk about magazine capacity, the magazine tube capacity and things such as that coming up here. Now, pump action, good thing about pump action is when you shoot, you cycle the action, and the chances of a malfunction are almost nil. The thing is you have to run the gun properly. All too often people shoot, decide what happened, and then before they shoot, they'll run the action again. Now, if you shoot, do whatever you're going to do, and then decide I need to shoot again, it's time then to shoot, not run the action and then shoot. You're way behind the curve. The way to operate a pump action shotgun is shoot and cycle. See what's going on, if that's all you're going to do. Shoot and cycle. See what's going on. Shoot and cycle. The action of cycling the gun should be absolutely automatic after firing around. And it takes training to do that. And all too often, you'll see people do that, and then they'll say, okay, I'm going to fire 3 rounds. So it's boom, run the action, boom, run the action, boom. And they don't run the action after the 3rd round. You must always run it always the same. For a 3-round shot, it would be boom, run the action, boom, run the action, boom, run the action. Okay? Then we'll decide what to do. Always finished with having run the action. That's the way to run a pump action shotgun, period. It's like doing defensive handgun shooting. I train people that are really high-end people. But here's the deal. When they know how many shots they're going to fire, they don't do things right after the last shot. Let's say you're going to fire 2 or 3 rounds into the chest. You'll do a 3-round burst to the chest. So boom, back on the sights and reset. Boom, back on the sights and reset. Boom, drop the gun and just fly off of the trigger. They don't get back on the sights and reset. After every round, that's what you do. Boom, back on the sights and reset. Boom, sights and reset. Boom, sights and reset. Then decide if you're going to bring the gun down and look around, if you need to shoot again, if you need to go to the head, whatever you need to do. You've got to do every round the same. Same thing, same guys that'll do this. If it's a single headshot that's called for, they come up, boom, trap the trigger, leave the gun up, look past it, rather than resetting the trigger and back on the sights, which is what you need to do. Follow through is what it's called. Pump action shotgun, the follow through is boom, run the action. Comes back, goes forward. Boom, run the action, back and forward. Every time you press the trigger. Be it live, or if you're practicing dry. Always run it the same. With a semi-auto, you don't have to worry about running the action. Now, most semi-autos out there have the tube-fed magazine, right? Some now come with a detachable box magazine, the Sega or Saiga, however it's pronounced properly, I don't know. It's potato, potato. However, I've never heard anybody talk about a potato as a potato or a tomato. But this phrase is still there. Again, I digress. So with the semi-auto shotguns, they will run for you. And they run not when you're about to shoot, but after you just shot. It's instantaneous. You need to be that semi-auto action on your pump gun if that's what you choose. Now, how many rounds of ammo to carry in the gun? For a home defense gun, you should have a decent amount of ammo. Now, most hunting guns, you're not going to get more than two or three rounds in it. Usually it's like a three-round magazine. You don't carry anything in the chamber. Some certain hunting regulations and laws will allow for that. So what you want to do is get an extended tube if it doesn't already have it. It probably extends out to about the length of the barrel. You can get those at a myriad of places. I choose to get my stuff through Brownells. Go to brownells.com and check it out, because Brownells has all types of tubes for all types of guns. Now, if you happen to be running something like a Benelli M4, which is the Marine Corps shotgun, the Benelli M4, you want to get an extended tube for that. Well, I recommend anything for the M4 to go to freedomfightertactical.com. Or you can just search Freedom Fighter Tactical. Go to Freedom Fighter Tactical for all things Benelli M4. You want a larger charging handle. You want an extended tube magazine on there. Anything. These guys custom design and have custom made every single thing that they sell. You want to remain 922R compliant because the Benelli M4 is an imported gun? Go to Freedom Fighter Tactical. Okay. With the shotguns, extended magazine tube, the tube should go out to about the end of the barrel. Now, some people, well, that's going to be awful heavy. Let me tell you something. In the middle of the night, crash, boom, bang, you're going to grab the gun. You are not going to be concerned about the weight. You're not going to pick it up and think, oh, man, this thing's kind of heavy. I wish it was a little bit lighter. No, you're going to be focused on the problem. At that point in time, the gun is a tool. Gun's a tool anyhow. It is just a tool. It depends on how you use it. The gun's a tool. You're going to grab it, you're going to go. If you want to smash some poisonous bug and all you have is a mallet, you're not going to worry about the weight of the mallet. You're going to be worried about the bug. You just grab the mallet and swing it. You worry about the weight of the mallet that you used maybe later if it even ever comes up. Oh, yeah, I guess that was kind of heavy. Didn't feel like it when I was smashing the poisonous bug. Same thing with a shotgun. Any gun, for that matter, when it comes to a defensive situation. Unless it's just out of line. You get a 90-pound wife carrying a 12-gauge shotgun that's got a magazine tube of 9 rounds. You get a side saddle on the side with another 6 and a sling on it that's carrying another 20 rounds on it, then it might be a problem. So you want to have at least 5-6 rounds loaded into the gun. 12-gauge, tactical buckshot. Now, not slugs. We don't want to go with slugs. Slugs do provide an over-penetration issue. Do not have your home defense gun with slugs. Okay? Slugs are designed for getting that gun to a short rifle distance with a gun that's not designed to be a rifle. So stick with a double-aught buck. Lead double-aught buck. Tactical loads. Best stuff I can recommend. Now, you've got your pump action shotgun or you've got your semi-automatic shotgun. They've got 5-6, maybe more, 2¾-inch, 12-gauge lead tactical buckshot loads in there. What else goes on the gun? The only thing I would recommend, if you want to do it, is that of a flashlight. Now, keep in mind, flashlights work both ways. You can see where it's coming from. If you're going to have a flashlight on the gun, you have to learn what's called flashlight discipline. Flashlight discipline is where, now keep in mind, if you're in your own home, you're going to know it better than anybody else. So chances are you're not going to need a flashlight. Now, in my house, I'll tell you one thing I do. I get a bunch of these little night lights that plug in, photo sensor, so at night they come on. I get the little LED ones. They last forever. They cost nothing in energy. I mean, I probably don't go through a watt of power in a night with these. And I place them strategically, tactically, if you will, around the house. And I start in different areas of the house. And I look around and say, okay, can I pick up somebody here? Is there a shadow? Sometimes I employ my kids or even friends to play this game to make sure these things are set up properly. And also to teach them how to do this. So I don't even need to have a flashlight on my gun. If you do, learn your flashlight discipline. There's a way to come up, search, light off, and then you move. You have to be, it has to be like chess, thinking a few moves ahead. That's all you need. Some sort of sights, if it's bead sights, rifle sights, ghost ring sights, something like that. You just want to have something other than just raw index of a sightless coach gun. Okay? Otherwise, you're going to be practicing a whole lot with the how you would actually mount the gun if there's no sights around it. So, we're talking about shotguns, talking about 12-gauge tactical lead buckshot, 5-6 rounds minimum, extended tube on it if you need it, maybe a flashlight, maybe not, depends on the situation you're in at your home, and you're good to go. After this, we're going to move on. In the second hour, we're going to talk about rifles and also the little pistol caliber carbines. So that'll be coming up after this long break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio. We'll be right back.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. So now we're going to move on to other long guns when it comes to home defense. Rifles, we'll talk about that right now. Now we're talking about a rifle. We're talking about a rifle that actually shoots a rifle caliber. Like a minimum rifle caliber of like a .223, like an AR-15, on up. Now, .223, when that round, or 5.56 military, the NATO designation, if you fire that round, it's designed to tumble once it hits something. So over-penetration is really not much of a factor if you're using standard rounds. If you're using some sort of a designed penetrator round, then it will penetrate and will not tumble. That round's designed to not tumble. Case in point, a lot of the 5.56 green-tipped ammo that they've been issuing in the sandbox, when they shoot the bad guys, as the military guys will refer to as the Hodges, I think is the term that they use, when they shoot them with these green-tipped ammo, the rounds just tend to go through. They're not tumbling and creating these horrible wound cavities that the round is designed to do. The reason is the green-tipped ammo is designed to go through body armor, specifically Soviet-made body armor. And once it penetrates through that, then it tumbles. So if there's no Soviet-made body armor for it to go through, it's basically a dumb round, and it just goes through. And it might start tumbling after it exits. Otherwise, it's leaving a .22 caliber hole. So, the other thing is, those rounds are incredibly loud to shoot. If you fire a handgun or a shotgun indoors, really no big deal. If you do it in a non-defensive situation, your ears are going to ring and it's going to hurt and it's going to suck for a few days. In a defensive situation, almost universally, you will realize you're going to experience what's called auditory exclusion. You'll never hear the shot. But with a rifle, with auditory exclusion, oftentimes that's going to mess you up and give you permanent hearing damage, especially in practice. So don't practice it that way. Also, you're talking about a gun. If you go onto something like your deer gun, you're talking about generally a longer barreled gun, a little difficult to wield and move around corners. If you're going to hold up in a spot and just wait there, okay. And usually one round per customer is fine with a rifle. Same thing with a 12-gauge shotgun. Generally speaking, one round per customer is all they're going to need. However, to actually move around and search and clear your house with your favorite hunting rifle, that's a difficult thing to deal with. Now, some people will go through and they'll get the ATF SBR, the short-barreled rifle paperwork, and they'll register their lower AR-15. They'll get a shorter version of an AR-15. So now it's a short-barreled deal. This makes it easier to actually move around corners and clear stuff out. If that's your job, then that's fine. Okay. Otherwise, I wouldn't recommend a rifle in the house. Now, I know some guys that are in this industry, guys I've worked with, people that are colleagues of mine, that believe a rifle is a great thing in the house. One guy I know actually has an AR-15 with a suppressor threaded onto it, and that's his house gun. Okay. I see that as kind of a rule three problem. Now, I should say a problem three. Here's the deal. Problem one is the bad guy. Problem two is the cops when they show up. Problem three is any potential criminal or civil liability in court. You have a suppressor on there. It's legal. Great. But it can be argued against somebody who's suing you, or even a DA that doesn't like you, doesn't like guns, doesn't, you know, just anti-gun in general. And that suppressor becomes a weapon against you after you use it against somebody who broke into your house. So kind of a problem three issue. Which brings us to our next gun. So I'm not a huge fan of the rifle for clearing the house. Shoulder-mounted guns, yes. That brings me on to number two. I'm sorry, number three. We talked about handguns, shotguns, rifle, number four now, which is a very narrow niche, and we can really shore this up pretty quickly. That is a submachine gun. A submachine gun, you can't get them everywhere. They are incredibly expensive, and they can be difficult to get. If you're going to look into getting NFIA items, I recommend listening to the commercial spots I've got and get an NFA trust through me, so it's easier to get, it's quicker to get, and it's more flexible what you can do with these NFA items if using the proper trust. So, shameless self-plug, go to BillCarnes.com, click on the NFA tab, you can learn about them, email me directly if you want to know more, and we'll get it done. I get trust done in about a week, sometimes even quicker. So, the submachine gun is wonderful, because now what we're doing is we're throwing pistol caliber rounds downrange in rapid succession from a generally compact shoulder-fired gun with 4 points of contact. It's in your shoulder, your firing hand, your support hand, and you've got a cheek weld. 4 points of contact, which is what's great about a long gun. 4 points of contact, more stable, easier to maneuver around, generally shorter, and you end up getting multiple rounds on target quickly. Kind of like the idea of a shotgun. Submachine gun is wonderful. Wonderful home defense gun. But you've got a real problem two and an incredible problem three issue if you shoot somebody in a defensive situation with a submachine gun, depending on your locale. Okay. Again, problem one is a bad guy or bad guys. Problem two is when the cops show up and see what's going on. Problem three is criminal and civil liabilities, generally court sort of stuff. You know, work dealing with the DAs or a judge or a jury. Be careful with that. With that being said, the submachine gun is actually my favorite choice for a home defense gun. It's just not a very realistic choice considering today's society. They're incredibly expensive because you can't get anything made after May of 86. So there's a finite number of them. Certain areas of the country, you can't legally possess them at all. And then on top of that, the federal government knows that you've got the thing. Who wants them knowing everything? I know there's arguments they know everything anyhow. Great. Okay. You don't need them drawing a bead on you with that. And then you've got any particular DA or judge or jury or a plaintiff attorney in a civil case, they could just show the evils of machine guns and how you must be paramilitary-minded and you were waiting for somebody to come in and how the person that you shot was really not a bad guy and this is a situation and blah, blah, blah. So you want to avoid all of that. All right, so we've covered handguns, rifles, shotguns, submachine guns. When we come back from this next break. What we're going to get into then is the shoulder-mounted, pistol-caliber, shoulder-fired carbines. Now, historically, I've never had much use for these things until now. So we'll talk about these after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
And welcome back, everyone. So we've talked about home defense guns, handguns, shotguns, rifles, submachine guns. Now we're going to move on to a relatively newer sort of a gun that's out there. Now, and that would be that of a pistol caliber, shoulder fired carbine. Something that would shoot maybe a 9mm round or a 40 caliber round, 45, 10mm, something like that. Now, these guns I used to not have much of a use for. My philosophy was if it's shoulder fired and it's chambered in a pistol caliber, like, you know, a smaller pistol, a defensive pistol caliber, not like a hunting pistol caliber, like a lever-action 44 Magnum rifle, something like that. My philosophy was if it didn't fire full auto, all it basically is a long semi-automatic handgun, why use it? Until now. I've given it a lot more thought. I've consulted some other people in the industry, and in the last, it was probably about 3 years ago, is when I kind of changed my whole mind on this. If you get something that holds a higher capacity and it is a shoulder-fired gun, you know, it's not too long. You have to have at least a 16-inch barrel on these things, and most of them are 16 inches, 16 and a half from factory usually, and not longer than that. Short shoulder stock on it, and you're able to actually line up. With these guns, you could control recoil a lot better than with a handgun. Because, again, with a handgun, you got 2 points of contact, one of each of your hands. With one of these shoulder-fired carbines, you've got 4 points of contact. Both hands, your shoulder, and your cheek weld when you mount the gun to shoot it. With these 4 points of contact, longer barrel, more weight behind the gun. More points of contact, double the points of contact. The ability to get back on target with a pistol caliber is not anything in a shoulder-fired weapon that's going to give you much in the way of recoil. So that your ability to get back on target and through semi-automatic trigger presses, get multiple rounds downrange on your adversary in rapid succession, very short period of time, these are a very good, viable option. Additionally, if you put something like a little EOTech, one of these little holograph sights, as long as the batteries are good, some sort of little holograph sight so you can come up where that little dot is, once it's sighted in, is right where it goes. You can shoot with both eyes open. You don't have to worry about closing an eye and getting on sight. It's fast. It's cheating. And if you're not cheating to win a gunfight, your tactics suck. In a gunfight, a couple of rules. Always cheat, always win. There ain't no rules in a gunfight. Okay? That's really the way to look at it. If you can get one of these little EOTech bad boys on there, you might want to put a small flashlight. By the way, guys, if you put any sort of flashlight on a gun for home defense use, please limit how bright it is. 65 lumens are just fine. 65 lumens from an LED light is wonderful. You want to jack it up as high as 90 lumens? I wouldn't suggest that in a house where all of your walls are painted white. Certainly anything beyond that, I wouldn't use at all. There are too many reflective surfaces in a home. First of all, light-colored or white walls will really get you too much light back on yourself. You'll be blinding yourself as well. Especially if there really isn't a bad guy there. Now you're blind and they're doing fine and they know where the light came from. They can come in and get you if they want. Mirrors, pictures, or artwork with glass on it, all of those things reflect light. So if you put a light on a gun or you carry a light to search your home, nothing too bright. The brightest thing I have on a home defense gun is a 65 lumen light. And I now prefer the LED lights. The LED technology has come a long way in the last 5 or 6 years. And it's really good stuff now. Which means that your relatively high price when compared to other lithium batteries that power most of these lights last immensely longer because it's lit with LED lights. And my survival pack, my 3-day pack, which is actually for the uses I have, is actually set up for a 1-week pack. I have a couple of flashlights in there, both of them lithium battery powered, and both of them LED lens. So I got plenty of light for plenty of days out in the field if I need it. Now, with these shoulder-mounted carbines, these pistol-caliber shoulder-fired carbine guns, the newer ones that are out there, Beretta makes one, the old Calico, which you could actually get a 100-round drum in 9mm put on there, whatever it might be. These sorts of guns for home defense work really well. You don't have to worry about the over-penetration factor, if that is something that you're worried about. And you have the ability to use this thing to actually go out. If you want to go out and hunt rabbits or something like that, something that's not too big, something that's not too far, these things are kind of fun to do that with as well. And they're not very expensive guns. And since they're pistol calibers, you can get the ammunition almost anywhere. Oftentimes with the tactical load 12-gauge buckshot, you have to buy 25, 30, 40, 50 rounds, probably at least 25 rounds, of several different manufacturers and pattern with your shotgun until you find something which is consistent and gives you the pattern you're looking for. The beauty of a 12-gauge shotgun, by the way, folks, is that it has this expanding conical pattern. That it expands is the beauty of a shotgun. Okay, if it doesn't expand, if you use the Federal Flight Control, okay, well, that's fine, but it's basically just going to be a single big caliber. As long as you hit, that's fine. You can offer a little bit of error with a shotgun. Now, in home defense situations, shorter distances inside, you're not going to get a huge spread. So to keep it tighter with a Federal Flight Control ammunition or a Vancomp barrel, something like that, is really kind of superfluous, really, when it comes to home defense stuff. But you just don't want something that's going to string wildly or have a huge pattern indoors. So with a 12-gauge shotgun, you're going to want to buy probably at least half a dozen different manufacturers of the same type of ammo. Go out and pattern it on paper and see where these things pattern. When you find the one you want, it's consistent, you're able to have a little bit more predictability in what goes on, then you go back and you buy a bunch of it from the same lot. Okay, you don't want to order it online, and then when you order the other stuff, it comes from a different lot. You might have a different pattern. Anytime you change your ammunition or they change lots, you have to repattern stuff. It will change. It's changed on me. So, some of the things you want to look forward to. Back on it with these little carbine shoulder-fired pistol-caliber guns. Very good for home defense. If you want to put a small light on it, great. If you want to throw something like a little EOTech sort of a hollow sight, that's wonderful as well. So that's the sort of things that we're talking about when it comes to guns for home defense. We want to be able to keep these things in line. We want to be able to have something that's reliable and usable. And we want to be able to have something that will actually work for the intended purpose. So hopefully that summed it up. We've got some of the things going on around the country coming up after the break. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnage. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back. You know, we've really been dealing with this whole thing with Project Gunwalker and Operation Fast and Furious out of the ATF, which was their gun providing, gun smuggling, international gun trade, illegal activities of the last year and a half, 2 years, something like that. And it's really caught up with them. And, of course, the fallout's coming. Now, Felipe Calderon. Felipe is pissed off at everybody in America, saying that being able to buy guns in America easily over the counter is what's getting all the guns to the drug cartels in Mexico. Now, for those people who are just boobs and will sit there and watch TV and read the news, okay, it makes sense, huh? And not look into it, okay, you'll convince the demagogues, really the idiots that are out there. For those of us with a couple more IQ, a few more brain cells than the boobs that you're talking to, we know that you're full of crap and we can follow everything through. When politicians get up there and lie and try to get an agenda passed, which is unpopular with the people, there's money behind it. Now, for Felipe Calderon, there's billions behind it. Because if he doesn't play, Washington doesn't pay. Yeah, he's not going to get the billions of dollars that the federal government hands out to Mexico in both money and in different aid on an annual basis if he doesn't play game with Obama. Now, here's the deal. Obama never talks about gun control directly. He doesn't. And some of the people really tight in his staff, they kind of avoid it as well. They use other avenues. Now, they're bright people. I mean, how do you get some guy with absolutely no chronological history in this country? We don't even know anything about his background. We know more about Obama's background in the last 6 months than we did up to that point, including the entire 2 years he was campaigning. So we know nothing about this guy. They're smart. They got into office with a lot of help from a lot of friends, I'm sure. They're actually trying to raise $1 billion for the re-election campaign. Oh, that's our goal. $1 billion for the re-election campaign. Okay, great. Well, these are the same guys that approve giving money to Mexico. And if Calderon doesn't follow along, if he's not their lapdog trying to get gun control by saying, your ease of guns in America is helping to fuel all of the drug cartels in Mexico, murdering thousands of people a year for the last several years. He doesn't say that. He doesn't get his money. It's just the way it goes. So, we realized that the ATF was involved in completely illegal manners with this Gunwalker and Fast and Furious. And what they're claiming is, well, we were going to try to track these guns to the cartels so we could take them down. You're not Interpol, and Mexico knew nothing about it. And you have enough on them when it comes to the drugs. You don't need to add guns into the mix. What are you going to do next? Add prostitution? You could have guns, hookers, and blow? I mean, is that what ATF is looking for? It's going to be a party at the ATF. Woo! Seriously? You need to get together with the DEA and do that? And then some other organization for a prostitution ring? What is with you guys? And it's from top down at ATF. Everybody involved should be arrested and prosecuted. Every single one of them. And as I said on last week's show, they should be prosecuted and tried for treason against the United States. Because they're involved in illegal international arms trafficking. That's treasonous against the United States. And if you actually read the Constitution of the United States, it's the only crime that's listed. And it's punishable by death if convicted. Yes. Yes, it is. So that's what I call for when it comes to all of these fools at Department of Justice, down into the ATF, everybody that had anything to do with making this Gunwalker in Fast and Furious go and make some of the field agents who were against it and told them to shut up. Those guys, if we even keep the ATF, I think we should disband it. Those guys, at least. As a matter of fact, Representative Daryl Issa, who's leading some congressional investigations into this entire ATF debacle, has let the people at the ATF know, you'd better realize that protection's going to go to any whistleblowers on this deal. No threats of retaliation, no retaliation against anybody that said anything. It's not going to go pretty for you guys if that's your intention. That's your history. Don't do it. Just knock it off. Well, of course, this whole Fast and Furious thing, this Gunwalker, Gunrunner, whatever it is, this whole thing, what it does is it tries to do two things. First, they try to actually get American guns into Mexico so that when they are recovered at crime scenes, they say, oh yeah, look, the percentages from American guns are increasing, and look, these things are new. These have come out in the last 2 or 3 years when their old statistic was sorry, and the American guns that were there were an average of 14 years old. So what they're doing is they're padding this, creating a new statistic by violating national and international law. And then claiming, well, we don't know who authorized it. Eric Holder, we don't know who authorized it. Liar. You're lying to Congress. Let's put you under oath. Anyhow. Then when Calderon says, oh, yeah, see, what we need to do is take away your Second Amendment rights. The same rights that I'm going to stand up here and in just a moment say that I believe you should have your Second Amendment rights in America. Believe that we should have the rights. Guess what? The Bill of Rights, the first ten amendments, the Bill of Rights. It's very clear. The Founding Fathers put those in there and said these are God-given rights. And these are enumerated. There are countless other rights that you have that we're not going to spend the time here to enumerate. We couldn't possibly come up with all of them. But here's the guiding principles behind them. These are God-given rights, and we're going to protect them. So anybody that says we should repeal any of the first 10 amendments, well, they're morons, because that means that you would repeal a God-given right, a right of birth that we recognize. Oh, yeah, we shouldn't recognize that God-given right anymore. We should go against what God has to say when he's going to create you. When he's going to create mankind. Oh, okay. So you're an idiotic moron. I get it. That now that I know you're an idiotic moron, I don't need to read or listen any further. Because you don't understand what you're talking about. But you just stand on a soapbox and cry it out loud. I like to do a little bit more research into things. So, I know when Felipe Calderon gets up there and starts talking bad about American guns and how they're fueling the problems in Mexico, I do know this. The problems in Mexico are coming from drug cartels. The drug cartels want to smuggle their illegal drugs into the United States where there's a demand. And Mexico has decided we don't want to do that. We want to go after these guys. Okay. How do we defuse this entire situation? How do we make it to where the drug cartels don't have to worry about smuggling anything into the United States anymore? I'll tell you how. And it's a controversial opinion, but more and more people are coming around to it. I used to be completely against it. Now I'm not. Legalize the drugs. Put some sort of regulation on them, as the government will do, but legalize them. Now, they can come in. The illegal stuff on the street, you don't need to worry about because people can get them through whatever relatively simple process. Some sort of regulation on them. You know, when you have things that are illegal, is there much of a whiskey, like an illegal moonshine problem in this country? No. The reason is, you're 21, show you got some sort of ID for it, and you're otherwise not barred from the court from having alcohol, you can go and get it. It's readily available. It's easy. But there are some restrictions. Same thing would happen with the drugs, which would eliminate this entire problem coming from Mexico and a lot of problems here in this country. Stay tuned. More after the break. We'll be right back. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back up, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not when you belong.
And welcome back from the break, everyone. Now, let's talk a little bit about illegal immigration. Illegal immigration. Not legal immigration. Illegal immigration. Now, with illegal immigration, here are some of the arguments for illegal immigration. They say, well, you know, these guys are going to take low-paying jobs that Americans just don't want, so we should let them in. Okay, let's look at this. Let's say somebody comes in to take a low-paying job, and in fact, because they're illegal, they're going to get less than minimum wage. Minimum wage right now is, what, $8.25 an hour, $8.30, $8.35 an hour, something like that? Minimum wage, federal minimum wage. So somebody comes in and they're going to, and a lot of people are, oh, it's cool because they like their gardener, the person that cleans your house. Okay, so someone's going to come in and they're going to accept some sort of a job, whatever that job might be, some sort of manual labor job, be it in a factory or out in the field or wherever it is. And they're going to get paid, let's say, $5 or $6 an hour. That person has a spouse, has a wife. She might be doing the same thing. So now they're making $10 or $12 an hour. They got kids at home. Now making $5 or $6 an hour, especially if you're illegal, you're not paying any taxes. All that's under the table. You get no taxes taken out at all. Okay, fine. Good. You know, argument with the whole income tax thing anyhow. But that money's all going to them. Good. Fine. But the tax, the income tax, is properly implemented on foreigners deriving U.S. source income. So if anybody should be paying income tax based on the law, it should be foreigners deriving U.S. source income, which is what we're talking about. We're talking about foreigners here in this country deriving income here in the States. We, the majority of us, if you get David Champion's book, Income Tax Shattering the Myths, you'll learn that most all of us, within the sound of my voice, don't owe any tax. No income tax. But through the way that the IRS does things, they kind of perpetuate this long-driven crime. The illegals that are in this country are the ones who legally are obligated to pay income tax, but they don't. So they're making collectively $10 to $12 an hour. They got kids at home, right? How are they going to be able to afford a place to live? Some sort of government assistance. Some sort of provided Section 8 housing. How are they going to be able to afford to feed everyone? Well, that comes through more government assistance. Now we're talking about food stamps. Their kids are going to get a free education. Okay, the taxes are going to be paying for the kids' education. The kids, on top of that, because the folks are destitute, they're already Section 8, they're going to get free breakfast and free lunch. Okay, so they're going to get free food, free education. They've worked for none of this. Now, one of the reasons that we have this big housing crisis is, in America, up until about 3 or 4 years ago, just about anybody could buy a house. It was easy. And oftentimes you didn't need to have any money down. So nobody worked towards it. So they didn't really care if they lost it. No big deal. I don't have that much into it. I'm paying the house payment here. I would have been paying rent somewhere else. I don't really have much of anything into it. Nothing more that would have been first and last month's down payment on a rental. What do I care if I lose it? Didn't have anything really invested. Same thing happens when you're here illegally and you get a bunch of free handouts. So now when we're talking about the food, the housing, of course they're going to get free medical care as well. Yeah, you go in, if something happens, you're going to get free medical care for illegals as well. So free housing, I don't get free housing. Free food, I don't get free food. Free medical care, I don't get free medical care. Not paying any taxes, which they are, by the federal law, actually legally responsible for paying. They don't pay into. Now what we're talking about is with wages and benefits, public benefits that comes from people like you and I. Now, they're collectively making an individual $30 to $40 an hour. Have a spouse in there, now it's $60 to $80 an hour. That is an attractive way, an attractive reason for coming to the U.S. and sneaking in. Much more attractive than being legal. Being legal, you might not get as high of a salary, but you're going to pay taxes when then, you know, if you become a citizen, you wouldn't have to. You wouldn't be responsible, legally speaking. So you have that. You're going to be paying for rent, paying for food, paying for medical. You still get education, but your kids will be paying for lunches and breakfast. So being an illegal is far more attractive than being legal. Far more attractive. All you really have to do is get into the country, sneak in, and get established. And you're cool. Other than those people who are physically in the act of sneaking across the border, who actually gets deported in this country? Only those who are arrested for a deportable offense. That's it. Once you get snuck in and you get established, they're not kicking you out. It just doesn't happen. And when the Border Patrol is actually searching around 40, 50, 60, 80, 100 miles north of our southern border looking for people who are sneaking in, that's stupid. I've used the analogy before. That's like the story of the little boy who stuck his finger in the hole in the dike to keep the dike from bleeding and breaking. That's like him going downriver a few miles to collect up the water that's leaking in a pail, running it back up, throwing it back into the reservoir, and going back looking for more. That's kind of the way that this whole Border Patrol thing goes on. They're not patrolling the actual border worth a damn. I find myself in southern Arizona, I don't know, few times a year for different stuff I go down and do. And I see it. I know what's going on down there. So if anybody thinks that the argument for, well, you know, they're coming in to take lower paying jobs that Americans won't get. So, and that's all you need to worry about. They're just taking low paying jobs. It's not going to cost you anything else. Well, there's a huge lie and a misconception of economics because they're getting free rent. Now, it's free to them, but somebody has to pay for it. That's you and I. Free medical care. Free to them, but somebody's got to pay for it. That's you and I. Free education. Now, the more that are there, the more teachers we got to hire, the more classrooms we got to build, the more books we got to buy. So it's free to them, but not free to us. We have to pay for it. Free food. Free to them, not free to us. Somebody's got to pay for it. Who's that? We do. We're paying for all of this. And that's every single one of the millions of these people that come across America that get into the system. Now, some get out of the system. Very rarely, though. And they get to enjoy some form of anonymity. I mean, quite honestly, say somebody sneaks in from the southern border, the border, U.S.-Mexico border, and let's say that they happen to be Hispanic. You know, other countries, you'll get into Mexico and then sneak across. Let's say that the guy's name is Jose Garcia. Okay? Jose Garcia. How many Jose Garcias are there in this country? How many Jose Garcias born in 1977 are there in this country? It's relative anonymity. It really is. It'd be like a John Smith of old, living as John Smith. You know, back during the Depression or something. You could be literally, figuratively, virtually anonymous. So we're paying for all of this. Now, when all of our costs and taxes go up to support things like these social programs, what happens to our society? We get less money in our pockets. We start slipping into poverty. When we start slipping into poverty, what do we have to do to survive? Oftentimes, those that can't will turn to crime. Who are the victims of the crime? They're not the Jose Garcias of sorts that I was describing that are collecting all these benefits. It's oftentimes you and I through home break-ins or people coming into our place of business to rob us. And now our crime is soared. We need to put an end to this. Think of this next time you go to the ballot box. Thanks for being here. We'll be back next week.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com. I will